Thank you very much for coming to my talk. This work was done as a part of my dissertation at the University of Massachusetts under the direction of Michelle DaCosta. So in light of recent reports released by the UN, we know that climate change is now irreversible. It's occurring already. One of the challenges we need to reach in the coming 50 years is the challenge to be able to feed 9 billion people. And so maintaining agricultural productivity is important in the face of climate change, not only to understand the impacts, but to also adapt and maintain our productivity. As we all know, the major driver of climate change is greenhouse gases. Carbon dioxide has kind of become the poster child for this. Ozone is a little less known. Both of these greenhouse gases are produced via burning of fossil fuels. Carbon dioxide directly comes from that, whereas ozone precursors are produced via fossil fuels and then turned into ozone via photochemical cycle, which uses the sun. CO2 is known to stimulate plant growth broadly. Ozone is known to negatively impact plant growth, and so I wanted to see how these two interacted to affect productivity of grasses. And one of the challenges of feeding 9 billion people is our animal agriculture. And so there's been an idea that switching from grain-fed to grass-fed agriculture could possibly offset some of the issues with animal agriculture. And so maintaining grassland productivity is very important going forward. So I chose to look at Timothy grass, which is a widely used forage species. It's a perennial cool season C3 bunch grass. It produces a high quality hay, so it would be important for feeding the animals in the off season when pastures are less productive because of winter or under snow. As I said, it's widely used. It's used throughout North America and also Europe. And so this leads to a second interesting fact about Timothy grass, and that is that it's related to human health. So Timothy pollen is the third most allergenic species, pollen production species to humans in the United States. I don't know how many of you have allergies. I suffer horribly from allergies, so this is very interesting to me. And this is actually the major focus of my dissertation. And so through this work, we found that elevated CO2 increased the amount of pollen produced, regardless of ozone levels. And this is an increase of 53%. And so one of our questions is, well, what's the mechanism behind this pollen increase? And so there has been some past research done on agricultural production of Timothy grass under these two gases, but they have mainly focused on the end of the life cycle when the plant is traditionally harvested, and they've also only looked at the above ground biomass, not the crowns or the roots. And so in other experiments, they found that CO2 also ameliorated the negative impacts of ozone on this plant, but the mechanisms behind this weren't really determined. And so with that, our objectives were to determine the impact of carbon dioxide and ozone on the growth and biomass accumulation over the entire life cycle of Timothy. And we also wanted to examine the physiological mechanisms associated with the biomass changes and the pollen and pollen production. And mainly we did this through looking at carbon metabolism. So just to go into my material and methods now. So the cultivar that I used was Climax. It's the most widely used cultivar in North America. In fact, I went and bought the seed at our local agricultural supply store in Amherst, Mass. For growing conditions, I used an artificial growing medium, Metromix 200, and so plants were fertilized weekly because there's no fertilizer in the plants, and we watered as needed, which ended up being about every 2 days. These experiments were conducted in a greenhouse, so we had ambient light. In addition, I supplemented that with 400 watts metal halide lights. The greenhouse temperatures ranged from 17 to 29 degrees Celsius per day and 13 to 18 at night. This is a cool season grass, so we wanted to keep the temperature down, but with solar heating, often it went up to 29. So how do we change the atmosphere for these plants? So we have these special design chambers called continuously stirred tank reactor chambers. And so, can you see the cursor? Okay. So we inject our desired concentrations of gas into the top of the chamber, and then we have a paddle that continuously stirs the chamber and allows full mixing so that we have constant mixing and equal gas distribution through the entire chamber for the plants. So I did a completely randomized block design. I did four replicates, four blocks. For treatments, I used both current concentrations and predicted concentrations for 100 years from now of both carbon dioxide and ozone. And so treatment number one is my control, so it would be current conditions, ambient CO2, 400 parts per million, ambient ozone, 300 parts per billion. These are background concentrations. Treatment two would be my ambient CO2 with elevated ozone. Treatment three is elevated carbon dioxide with ambient ozone, and then my last treatment would be elevated carbon dioxide and elevated ozone. for measurements, so we looked at biomass. For biomass, we did only one plant per pot because I wanted to see what the growth was of each individual plant. We did destructive harvest every 3 weeks, starting at 3 weeks and ending at 15 weeks. I looked at three pots per chamber. We separated up the shoot, the crown, and the root. It was dried in the oven for 70 degrees, at 70 degrees C for 48 hours, and then weighed. We also looked at total non-structural carbohydrates. For this, we had more plant material per pot because we needed more plant material to do the analysis. So we had 20 seeds per pot. Again, we did every 3 weeks, starting at week six, because that's when plants were big enough to actually harvest material to do analysis on. We again looked at shoots, crowns, and roots. I did a composite sample of three pots per chamber in this, and we measured the TNCs using calorimetric assay and a spectrophotometer, and we based this to reference glucose standard curve. We also looked at photosynthesis rate, stomatoconductance, and water use efficiency, again on three pots per chamber. For photosynthesis and stomatoconductance, we measured the most fully expanded leaf at the top of the canopy. It had to be greater than 7 millimeters in width to fit into the chamber. We used this using a Ceres 2 gas exchange analyzer from PP Systems. And then for water use efficiency, we sent them off for carbon isotope analysis. So our idea between doing three-week intervals was we wanted to look at different stages of growth stages within the Timothy life cycle. And so we started off with seed, and at 3 weeks, there's about 2 to 3 leaves. By 6 weeks, we had 5 to 6 leaves, and the plants were beginning to tillering. At 9 weeks, they were full-on tillering. At 12 weeks, they were tillering and beginning their stem elongation, which is the beginning of the flowering stage. And then at week 15, they were at full flowering. So we hit sampling periods at each of the different growth stages. For experimental design and statistical analysis, I used a randomized complete block design. I separated the analysis at each harvest date, so I looked at 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 9 weeks. And then the data was subjected to an analysis of variance to determine treatment significance, and means were separated using Tukey's HSD. So now on to the results. So in a nutshell, the effect of these gases was very dependent on the growth stage of the plants. And so this is just an overview picture. So here, the gray dotted line is my ambient CO2 elevated ozone. You can see how much it negatively impacts growth of Timothy. And then this is my control, ambient CO2, ambient ozone. Oh, I think it's disappearing. And then this is my elevated CO2, elevated ozone, and this is elevated CO2, ambient ozone.
Is it grounded plant?
What?
Grounded plant?
I'm sorry, I can't understand you.
Is it grounded plant?
Plant.
Yes, sorry. So now we're going to look more closely at each of the weeks. So early on, at week 3, these are the results. So across the bottom here, I have my 4 treatments. Ambient CO2, ambient ozone, my control, then ambient CO2, elevated ozone, elevated CO2, ambient ozone, and elevated CO2, elevated ozone. My error bars are standard errors. On the y-axis, I have unit of measurement here. It's total dry weight, grams. This is going to be the setup for most of my graphs. And then the letters up top are the Tukey's HSD results, and different letters denote significance at the 0.05 level. So here at 3 weeks, we can see that we don't have a stimulation by elevated CO2. We do have a negative impact of ozone already. And then we're starting to see a partial amelioration of negative impacts of ozone by elevated CO2. You can see how tiny the plants are up in the top left-hand corner, or here, right. So it was very small at this stage. Results were similar at week 6, and so I'm not going to present those. Here's a picture of an ozone-injured leaf. You can see the chlorosis, where the photosynthetic tissue has been killed in weeks, and you can see the white marks. So at week 9, this is during the tillering stage, we start to see stimulation by elevated CO2. Again, we're still seeing the negative impacts of ozone. And then we're now seeing a full amelioration of the negative impacts of ozone by CO2, such that our elevated treatments now match our control treatments. So then breaking this down into shoot, crown, and root, we can see that the major driver of this is the shoot tissue. It's the largest tissue. It follows the exact patterns of the total dry biomass. Looking at crown and root, we're also seeing stimulation by elevated CO2 in the crown and root. We're seeing with negative ozone that negative, ozone negatively impacts shoot and root and crown a little bit less. So here's a picture at week 9. So I have my two elevated ozone treatments over here on this side, and you can see with elevated CO2 you start to see increase in biomass. Then on the left side is my two ambient ozone treatments, and again you can see with elevated CO2 you see increase in biomass. So at this stage we also started looking at carbon assimilation. And so here looking at photosynthesis, we see that with elevated CO2 we have an increase in the rate of photosynthesis. The results for 9 weeks were also similar to results at 12 weeks. And so you may wonder why I'm not seeing a negative impact of ozone on this. And this is because the tissue that I measured the youngest fully expanded leaf at the top of the canopy, and ozone impacts older leaves more because it's a cumulative response. And so we didn't see the ozone impact. We also looked at total non-structural carbohydrates this time. So you can see that in the leaf tissue we had an increase in the amount of free sugars available. And since this is the stages leading directly up to flowering, I would say this is possibly the mechanism behind the increased reproduction that I saw in these plants. We did not see stimulation in the crown and the root, but I just want to remind you from the previous slide that we did see increased growth in response. So the sugars were probably being used for growth. So then moving on to 15 weeks, which is now full flowering, we no longer see a stimulation by CO2, and this is corroborating past research with this, where they didn't see a stimulation in response to elevated CO2 in the above ground biomass of the plants. My hypothesis behind this is that the plants were now allocating their energy to increased flowering over biomass production. We're still seeing a negative impact of ozone on the plant tissue, and this is similar in the crown and the roots. So in summary, ozone reduced growth early in the life cycle, 3 weeks, and then also throughout the entire life cycle. Elevated carbon dioxide really had a stimulatory effect only during tillering of 9 to 12 weeks on the growth of Timothy. It's possible that these increases in productivity during the tillering stage is what resulted in greater energy for reproduction. So at harvest time, there were no differences in shoot biomass with elevated CO2. So it's probably not likely that we will see increased productivity with changing climates and increased CO2, but in a high ozone environment, having elevated CO2 will help alleviate some of the negative impacts of ozone. And so with that, I have questions, but I have time, so I'm actually going to show you my water use efficiency slide. I took it out, didn't have time when I was practicing. So just to verify, the other data that we're seeing, we did see reduced somatic conductance with our increased rates of photosynthesis, and that is coming clear in our isotopic analysis of water use efficiency. So with that, I'll take any questions. And I want to thank my committee members and my advisor, Michelle DaCosta, and all the graduate students that helped me collect this data.
You said that on the long term, elevated CO2 has no impact on productivity.
Yeah, so during what would be the agriculturally significant stage where they would traditionally harvest, there was no increased biomass in the above ground. And this was actually corroborated by past researchers done by Mortensen out in Europe, where he also found that there was no increased above ground biomass in response to elevated CO2. I was working in chambers and I had a limited amount of plant that I could fit in there, so I would definitely say possibly my sample size had an issue on that. I have
C3.
You mentioned that you provide supplemental lighting in 400 watt metal halide. Did you measure PAR, and do you know to what extent or to what light level you actually had available to plant?
It was about 800. So it was probably lower than what you would have in the field just because it was in a greenhouse. And that also could have, that could have affected things.
You mentioned that the CO2 might cause increased production of pollen. Mm-hmm. Did you see bigger spikes?
So actually, no. So there was no change in flower size, just in of pollen production, and that suggests that either the plants, the flowers themselves are becoming more male, or just the anthers are producing more pollen. And actually my paper just came out today for that in Plus One, shameless plug, so please read it. The water use efficiency?
Let's thank Jennifer for another excellent presentation.